Well, good afternoon or good evening, wherever you be in the world. This is Ralph Kermit Witteroy II coming to you live out of Alaska. And a beautiful fall day today. It got down to 36 and up to about 50, and the leaves are turning. And had some friends, they came over last night, got to eat steak. So I'm all good to go, keeping my overweight figure in shape. And the issue that we're going to talk on, I'm real honored. We're right after the break going to bring on Andrew Johnson out of the UK. And I'm very honored that he could come on the show. And we're going to talk about crop circles, what evidence might be found in crop circles that might be able to tie it to 911, and then debunking and getting the short of the facts, the substantive issues or empirical evidence out about 911. I really appreciate people such as Andrew Johnson. He has a web page, checktheevidence.com. The name should be self-evident. What a novel idea to actually check for real evidence and not a bunch of hype or muddling things up, as is what's going on, which we're going to talk about today also in this show. And I really I'm glad that he would come on and honored because in supporting Dr. Judy Wood, because Andrew Johnson's taking hits. Dr. Judy Wood is being vilified by all of these people out there, and they refuse to look at the evidence, and all they want to do is go after the messenger. And if this real evidence doesn't get out there, we'll never know whatever actually happened at 911. Probably the could be arguably called the crime of the century. And it's been covered up. And this show is not necessarily about who done it. It's what was done and what does the evidence show. And showing what all these architects, Gage, and all this other bunch of people out here are spreading around this nonsense. So anyway, music, and we'll be right back. And stay tuned. I think you're going to find this an extremely interesting show. Back in a minute. Well, we're back here, and today I have Andrew Johnson, which I am honored to have on. And Andrew Johnson grew up in Yorkshire, England, graduated from Lancaster University in 1986 with a degree in computer science and physics. He has mainly worked in software engineering, software development for most of his last 20 years. Also worked full and part-time in lecturing and tutoring in the adult education. He now works for the Open University part-time tutoring and assessing students whilst occasionally working freelance on various small software development projects. Now, as a computer programming teacher, Andrew can connect the dots better than the average person. He looks for clues that lead him to the big picture, and he is involved in many issues that people, such as crop circles, such as 911, chemtrails, looking for empirical evidence that people just won't touch. And I'd like to welcome you to the show, Andrew.
Hi there, Ralph. Thanks for inviting me on.
What time is it in England right now?
It's just past 11 p.m.
Well, we're just keeping you up late, and I appreciate you staying up for the people that we have on. And could you maybe start from a little different angle and say, like on crop circles, is there any validity to crop circles? Is there anything that might tie crop circles to 911, and do crop circles like disappear in a day or two, or could you?
Sure, yeah, I think it's an interesting question, which a lot of people dismiss the crop circle phenomenon as a purely, pranksters of various kinds, just making these things in the fields, overnight, just for a joke and to make some money out of publicity stunts and this sort of thing. And indeed, if you go onto the internet and you can look at a site called circlemakers.com, and you will see a diary of crop circles that this group have made. I think it's a group of about five or six guys, and they've actually done them for official corporate sponsorship deals. They made one for a music video in 2004. We do know that these things are on occasion made by people who go out and stomp the fields with planks of wood, basically. But I've always been very interested in some of these more complicated designs, which have been seen and seemingly, you know, far too complex to be made by this process of walking across the fields in the dead of night, you know, with a complicated design. Like, for example, we've got one that was made, I think, in 2001, which appears to be a response to the encoded message which was sent out in 1974 from the Arecibo radio telescope. And this is actually in the form of like a digital bitmap picture, where you can see it's actually an oblong picture with pixelated sections with various symbols embedded in this picture. And the crop formation that was in England in 2001 appeared to be a response to this message. And if you sort of Google crop circle Arecibo message, you'll find pages relating to this, but I basically, as you were sort of saying in the introduction, I've been trying to look into all these things since about 2003. That's when I really started looking intensively at things like crop circles, you know, the UFO issue and free energy technologies, and I'd looked at all of those, and I actually put together a presentation about crop circles in, I think it was 2006, you know, and I went to a local club and gave it there, and I came across the work, for example, of BLT Research, which is John Burke, Nancy Talbot, and W.C. Levengood. You can go onto their website. They have a lot of scientific research where they've actually, you know, gone to the crop circles. They've taken samples of the plants from inside where the formation has appeared, from outside where the formation has appeared. They've taken samples of the soil. They've done what's called an XRD study, which is basically X-ray diffraction. What that means is basically, if you, for example, hold up a CD to the light, you will see that you get this rainbow pattern. And this is what's called an interference pattern. You get this rainbow effect. And this is because the tracks on the CD, or the track, I should say, is close to the wavelength of light. So you get these interference effects. Now, if you want to look at the structure of crystals, you have to have a shorter wavelength radiation, which is what X-rays are. And this technique, I think, was invented in the 50s. And X-ray diffraction was used to discover the structure of DNA. And this BLT group, they use this technique, which is, you know, it's not cheap, it's quite an expensive technique to get done, to look at the soil samples from within a crop circle. And they'd also analyse the soils under a microscope. And I'd actually looked at this, you know, and I included this in the crop circle presentation in 2006. But then I was watching another presentation, and this was about, I think, about a year ago or something, and it mentioned this BLT website, and I thought, yes, I'm familiar with that. And then it mentioned iron microspheres in the soil, or iron spheres, and I thought, hang on a minute. And so I went back to the BLT website where I'd been before, and sure enough, there's a couple of photographs taken by W.C. Levengood. You can go onto these on bltresearch.com, look at the XRD study, the link they've got there. And in fact, it's a soil study, I think. The XRD study might be in that page, but it might be a separate page. But you can basically see these little spheres of iron. And it says these are magnetized, and they're between, I think, 10 and 40 microns in diameter. Now, this really triggered my interest because we've got this Steve Nee Jones character. It was a couple of years ago now, I think, possibly even 3 years ago, where he claimed to have published this study about some dust which was, I think, kept by Janet McKinley. It was from the World Trade Center destruction. She'd had this dust sample for so many years. They had studied this. I'm not sure whether they did it with XRD or just with a scanning electron microscope. And they discovered these iron spheres, 20 microns in diameter. I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. That sounds as the same as what was discovered in the BLT research, which was done 2 years in 1999 prior to 9/11. And then I started looking at some of the connections which I'd come across. For example, in Dr. Judy Wood's research, she had looked at the residual effects which seemed to be present at the World Trade Center. And when we went there in 2008, they were still shipping dirt in and out of the site, like changing diapers, as if they were trying to soak up some residual effects in the ground. But the key one, really, for me, was the Deutsche Bank building, or the Bankers Trust, which was damaged in the destruction of the World Trade Center complex. The Bankers Trust was, to explain where that was just across the road from the World Trade Center towers. I think it was about 300 feet away or something like that, maybe not that far. And some of the material which came down from the towers impinged onto the Bankers Trust, and there was this huge gash left in the building. Now, that was subsequently repaired. I think I may have got confused about the date on this, but I believe it was repaired by about 2004, 2003, maybe even as late as 2006, I'm not sure. But basically, they repaired this building. We have pictures of it being repaired. And then they took it down. And the official story was that the building had got a mold infection, and it needed to be demolished. So they were taking this building down piece by piece, literally piece by piece. They weren't going to blow it up like they've done with other buildings, at a cost of $70 million. And Dr. Wood had extracted some very interesting pictures from the FEMA report about the Bankers Trust building, showing this very strange bent metal. So that was residual effects. And I then found pictures of crop circles from the following year, where, you know, the formation had been made, the crop had been harvested, the field had then been replowed and, you know, replanted. And then the next year, early in the crop, you could actually see in the sort of, you know, the immature crop, you could see the pattern of the crop formation in the previous year. So I'm thinking, well, that to me looks like residual effects. So I have two things. I have the iron microspheres and the residual effects. And then I came across an account of a crop circle researcher called Pat Delgado. And he reported that just after a crop formation had been found in England, in Wiltshire, and they were studying this crop formation, it was at night, it was about midnight, I believe, he recounts this force acting on him. And he tries to struggle away from this force, and somebody else has to pull him away. And then he reports a few minutes later being levitated and carried a distance of about, I think, 12 feet across the ground, a few inches off the ground. He was levitated. So we've got levitation. So this was also observed at the World Trade Center, because we have the account of David Hansher, who also described it being airborne. 1 minute he was running away from the tower coming down, the next minute he was airborne. Those were his words. We have the upside down cars, which are there, upturned cars next to ones which are right way up. We have a couple of other witness accounts of them being levitated. So that was three phenomena which are associated with crop formations and with 9/11.
Hold that thought right there, Andrew. I hear the music. We got to pay some bills, and we'll be back in just a minute. Absolutely astounding. Okay, we're back here, Andrew, from the UK, talking about crop circles and astounding information. I'll continue with your thought. I got some questions when you get through with this.
Okay, sure. Yeah, thanks. So, you know, we've got these three phenomena. Just quick summary again. We've got the levitation. We've got the iron spheres, which appear to be magnetized, according to BLT. And we've got the residual effects. And the fourth thing that I came across was this issue of heat. You know, one of the big things that Dr. Judy has educated us all about is the heat issue at the World Trade Center. And there was this huge amount of destruction that took place with very little or no heat present. You know, very, very strange effects. And the other thing that which was highlighted in this XRD study, which I mentioned on the BLT website, was that the chap who was a world-renowned geologist in this area of specialism about the it's called smectites, I think, in the soils. He was an expert on these sorts of things and the types of materials that are found in soils. And he wrote this report about the BLT study, and he said that the crystals that were found in the XRD study in the soil indicated that the soil had been heated to 600 degrees centigrade. Now, of course, what he said was that this could only really have been, you know, done by two processes. One would be the huge pressure on top, you know, which you'd normally get in, you know, where you get layers of rock laid down over thousands or millions of years, uh-huh. and you get the pressure building up, the heat forms, and that creates this particular type of crystal structure that he'd observed in this soil sample. Or you could do it with microwave heating. But of course, if you heated the top of the field to 600 degrees centigrade, I mean, you just imagine getting some wheat out of a field, putting it in your oven, and switching your oven up to 600 degrees centigrade. Not that it would go up to 600 degrees centigrade, but you get the idea. It would just come out black into a crisp. And of course, those effects weren't seen in the crop circle. So again, we have the evidence of what looked like high heating next to the same evidence which showed there was almost no heating. So that was the fourth effect. So what I was beginning to think was, looking at some of the other, delving into some of the other crop formations, I mean, people should look at the crop formations. You know, I was talking to Dr. Judy about this actually, and she hadn't sort of realized the number of formations. I mean, just this year in the UK, we've probably had over 50 formations since about June. And some of these are very complicated. You know, you can go on to lucypringle.co.uk, or you can go on to Crop Circle Connector. You can go on to various sites, and they have many pictures of these formations. And there are a lot of them, and they're very complicated. And I noticed a couple of years ago that there seemed to be a preponderance of symbols within the crop circles which were to do with the Mayan calendar. And I'm thinking, well, let's say these just for the sake of argument, let's say these crop circles are being made by, you know, aliens. And why would they be, you know, making Mayan symbols? I mean, if you look at these formations, they actually contain encoded Mayan calendar numbers. I haven't looked at absolutely all the details, but I've looked at enough of them to see that yes, they do, you know, include some encoded symbolism. So I'm trying to put these two things together. We've got these sort of fingerprints from the World Trade Center and fingerprints of the crop circles matching up fairly closely, and then we've got this, in many cases, not all, in many cases, this Mayan symbolism being put in relation to 2012. So what I'm basically thinking is that somebody is, again, as they're doing with the whole scene of 9/11, putting false information into those areas that people are investigating deliberately, to throw them off the scent, to give them, you know, a false message, to give them a false understanding of what's really going on. And in essence, what I think some of the crop formations are being made by is some type of technology which is very similar to that was used to destroy the World Trade Center, and it operates on a different type of physics. And I suspect that what they're able to do is switch on and off gravity, because if we look at what John Hutchison does, which is what, you know, Dr. Judy Wood has tied up from her research into the World Trade Center, one of the effects that he's been able to produce is an effect on gravity. Which has, of course, implications for propulsion and everything, really, all kinds of things. And so if you can have, let's just say you've got this gizmo, which you can actually vary the force of gravity, if you can plug that into a computer, into a CAD package, and then you can draw out a design on your CAD package, it can be as complicated as you like, but you can then put that design into the pattern of a gravitational field over a crop formation, and you can make the crop formation. So I think that's basically how many of the crop formations are being made. They're being made but as a black operation by advanced technology, and in many cases they are being used to inject false information into what is loosely termed the New Age movement. to make them think about 2012 and this coming Armageddon and all this, that, and the rest of it, whilst really what we should be thinking about is the actual technology itself, who's operating it, and what its other potential is.
And, let me ask you this. So we have microspheres found. Now, when that was checked, they were within the air, the dirt, within the circles. Now, it wasn't found outside of the circles, right?
That's my understanding from the BLT study. Yes, it's just from within the area where the crop formation was.
Okay. Okay. Back in just a minute. I got a couple more questions. Back in a second. We're going to continue on. This is Ralph Winterroad. We got Andrew here from the UK, and he's laying out some connections here, and then we're going to get more into 911 and some of the phenomena. So let me ask you this, Andrew. Would you say that the evidence of microspheres being found in some of the dirt of crop circles is reliable?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty reliable. I mean, if you go and look at the BLT research website, you can check it out for yourself and see what you think of it. I've listened quite recently to a broadcast by Nancy Tolbert, who's one of the people, who's involved with running that website. Now, Nancy Tolbert herself, I think she's some type of coordinator of the research. She doesn't actually, do the experiments herself. But having listened to her as a speaker, she is a very, very good speaker, and she's clearly got a very good understanding of, what they're actually trying to do. And she knows about how the experiments should be performed, and she knows, for example, the sort of criticism that they're going to, be subjected to. They have had one or two papers published in the sort of scientific journals in relation to their studies. And it was interesting because I was actually contacted not long ago, about two or three months ago, out of the blue, by somebody from the US Geological Survey, and he knew this chap that I mentioned, Robert C. Reynolds. He actually knew him, and he was mentioning him in the email, and I sort of had to write back and say, well, yeah, that's very interesting, but I don't have any connection with him. I've just essentially posted this on my own website. I don't have a direct connection to BLT research or any of the people that are in it. So it's kind of like he'd mistook, my where I got the research from or something. I've referenced it all and everything. I don't claim anything is my own,
Sure.
So that was some kind of verification that what they were doing was legitimate. Somebody from the U.S. Geological Survey contacted me.
Let me ask you this about the next year of the crop circle, being planted, and the crop circle imprint is still there. Is that reliable evidence?
I believe so, because we've got several photographs of that. I've got a couple. I actually made this, what I've described into a little YouTube video. And I think if you go onto YouTube and put in 9/11 crop circle connection, you'll find this video comes up. It's about 10 minutes long, where I go through that and show you the pictures, including the pictures of the crops growing through in the next year's, the formation growing through in the next year's crop. And there are other pictures of that people can find for themselves too. I've seen several other pictures since I made the presentation, so it appears to be legitimate.
We go back to 911 and we go to the bank. Now, they actually repaired some minor damage to a bank.
That's right. The bank is still building. Yeah.
And then they turn around and they're destroying the bank. And so there is something that is, I don't know your word, is there's something going on that's not self-quenching. So steel is continuing, would this be correct, kind of like what John Hutchison has shown, accelerated aging, the steel will oxidize or in some way alter its actual elements of being steel. Would you attribute it to that, or what would you say there?
Basically, yeah. The short answer is yes. I think the process which is being used affects the material at some type of nuclear level. Now, when John Hutchison really gets going on this and talking about this, he talks about, temporal effects. And this is where, of course, a lot of people switch off, because if you talk about effects on time, people just think that's, you know, Star Trek science fiction. They tend to just switch off. But, for example, John Hutchinson has observed in his experiments something else which is very anomalous, which is a change in what's called the background radiation count. In other words, if you get a Geiger counter and you just leave it on your table in your kitchen, you will get a number of radioactive emissions being detected by the Geiger counter. I think it's something like, I don't know, it varies where you are on the planet, of course, but it's something like 2 or 3 a minute or something like that. Maybe not many more than that. But John has said that when he sets his equipment going, and he leaves a Geiger counter, you know, near the experiment, the background radiation count will drop, and then after he's, you know, switched everything off, it will, over a period of time, it will come back up again. So there is obviously some type of effect. Now, whether it's some type of blocking, you know, in terms of the blocking of the radioactive particles coming through and hitting the Geiger counter, or whether it's some type of effect on the way that the particles behave in time, we don't really know, because we don't know enough about how that sort of physics works.
But we have empirical evidence that they couldn't actually repaired a bank that should have just been able to be repaired, right, and then it should have been fixed, and then they're turning around and they're taking it down also after they repaired it, right?
Correct, and Dr. Wood's got a study of that on her site. You know, I forget which page it's on, but it's basically, you can see the pictures after 9/11. You can see the picture about, I think she's got another one from about, I don't know, about a couple of months after, where they've taken out all this damaged section and cleared it all out. It's just like, you know, they've got a whole section of building missing. And then you fast forward to, I think, about a year or 2 years later, and they've actually put all the floors back. So it looks like, they've got all the floors ready to put the glass back in. And then I went there in 2008, and it was down to about from 20 stories to about from 40 stories down to about 20. So, you know, it's a very peculiar thing that they've done.
So they're actually taking the bank apart.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, did I see on your site or somebody? Did I see something about they're putting water on the bank too, or something?
I don't know if they're putting water on the bank. What there was in 2006 is there were a number of unusual fires. In the shell of that building, which in itself was odd because I think they were still building up the outside, and apparently 3 firefighters were killed in 2006. And this was reported in the New York papers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got pictures of this fire as well. And if you go and look at these pictures, it's rather unusual where you've got this. It actually looks if you look at some of these pictures closely enough, and I know it sounds very odd, but it looks like the metal is burning and not the wood, because they've got some wood paneling, I think, where they're, you know, they've got these wood paneling to stop the workers from falling out on from wherever they were working.
Mm-hmm.
And that part doesn't seem to be burning, but the fire actually seems to be coming from somewhere in the metal. Now, that could just be a line of sight effect or something, but again, you'd have to look at the pictures and see for yourself if you think they look strange or not.
Okay, now Richard Gage, he's the thermite guy. He's in the thermite, spatial, super nano thermite, or sumite, thermite Mars, whatever. It's thermite, some type of a demolition thing. Now, him and a couple of other ones are saying that they found these microspheres in the dust, right?
Well, that wasn't actually Richard Gage himself, but it was Steve Jones, Niels Harrett, and I can't remember, there was a couple of other co-authors on that paper. I'd have to go and check that. But it's basically the two main guys that have been speaking out about that, the microspheres, is Steve Jones and Niels Harrett. Although Gage does mention it. Gage wasn't involved in writing the paper, but Gage has, you know, he's mentioned it. I think he probably mentioned
it. Okay, now this was found in crop circles in the ground also.
The microspheres were, yes. Yeah, they, of course, don't talk about that.
I get it. Okay. Now, getting into, I have looked at, I suffered through myself, oh God, listening to Richard Gage, the architects on this thermite, and then I have this press conference thing, and getting to the real substantive issues, the deal breakers in this, I looked at what I could see here of what he was trying to put out, and the only thing that I could see is they wanted to talk about basically the appearance of Building 7. It looks like controlled demolitions. And to me, I got out of the whole thing. I'd like your comments and what you can add to this or explain. There are two deal breakers with what he's talking about with Building 7, because they love that one, is the fact that, number one, there's no seismic footprint of 230,000 tons coming to a blinding halt. And number two, there are this empirical evidence of more than one of people videotaping with the audio on and is silently coming to the ground. And this was not possible with a controlled demolition. What's your take, or what could you add to that on the thermite guys?
Yeah, well, this is absolutely true. I mean, you know, you have two major anomalies there. And of course, you know, I never even picked up on this originally, because I basically swallowed the official conspiracy theory, as we now call it, in terms of the controlled demolition. But again, it's very, very simple. If you go back and review that evidence again, those are two of the main things that you mentioned. I mean, let's just say that the building caught fire and fell down like NIST said it did, then it's still going to make an awful racket when it's coming down, you know, in sound. And then, as you said, if you've got 230,000 tons falling down like that, you're going to get a seismic signature much bigger than I think it was something like 0.6, which, if you go and look at the official scale there, is that's what a jackhammer makes. I think is what it says on the official scale. If you hit the ground with a jackhammer, you'll get a 0.6 seismic signature, you know. So there's something very seriously wrong with these arguments that they're putting forwards. And you know, basically, if you start to drill into that group, it becomes more and more suspicious, you know, in terms of what they're actually up to.
Well, isn't it? I mean, those are deal breakers.
Yes,
it's an impossibility. It isn't a new phenomena. It's with, if it is controlled demolitions or any type of explosive, those are deal breakers. It can't happen.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what we can then see, and you have to, you know, you sort of tread carefully at first because it seems unbelievable. But, you know, we've described this in various ways. I mean, I know you've had Dr. Wood on two or three times now, and she's described some of these things. But it's like I describe it as they have two layers of cover-up. In other words, they do 9/11 with the advanced technology, which is, I think is essentially proved as far as I'm concerned. Well, it is proved as far as I'm concerned. You know, Dr. Wood's put it into the court case, as you know, and your listeners will know. So, you know, and I certainly tried to, you know, I put an affidavit in for Dr. Wood's case for my part of it. I don't know how much it was really worth, but I was confident that, you know, in a fair legal system with a fair and truly unbiased jury, that we would win the case. And if I wasn't convinced of that, I wouldn't have been involved with it. You know, so basically, that evidence has been put into a court case. But going back to the levels of cover up, they had to create the first layer of cover up was the official story, and then they created a second layer of cover up, like a second line of defense. So all those people who were thinking critically and were thinking, well, this official story is false, a good proportion of them would be, you know, caught in the net of this second layer of cover-up, which is basically the controlled demolition and the planes. And that, you know, we can see how effective that has been. And we've got, for example, the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. You can now make a tax-deductible donation to that organization.
But so it's so easy to debunk. There are two things that are deal-breakers. Yep. I listen, yep. I tell you what, I had to suffer through listening to that. I said, I have to say, I listened to it all. I want to give them a fair break. There is nothing there. And every time you come up when it was on Coast to Coast and they tried, well, how many tons of thermite? How did it get there? When Ian Putton, it's, well, we need a new investigation. No, wait a minute there. If it's thermite, you got to have with 25,000 years of engineering. There's ain't one of you turkeys in there that can figure out how many tons it would take to take these buildings down.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
And of course, the way that works, I mean, I didn't listen to the Coast to Coast debate, but I've heard Richard Gage, not the most recent one, I've heard him on Coast to Coast before. And to me, the way that is working is basically that you make the second layer sort of somewhat credible, but somewhat ridiculous. So somebody like Ian Punnett can come along, and he may be given the good questions to ask about the deal breakers. and he can basically debunk the theory. So you have all the people who've invested their faith, if you will, in the architects and engineers of the 9/11 Truth on the one hand, all the people who can see on the other hand that it's a ridiculous proposition, and then you have the rest of the people who just believe the official story anyway. So all the time you're dividing up all these people into these various groups, and you're managing the perception of 9/11, and basically you're giving the overall perception that you will never find out what happened.
What you also brought up is the toasted cars. We have cars a quarter mile or more, about 1,400 cars, and some of them look like they've been in a fire or something, you know. And the other part of it is like they're pristine. Fires don't happen that way. And then they also, I saw a gauge, he says, well, there were all kinds of molten metal coming down. So the question becomes, was there a puddles of molten metal? At some point, molten metal must cool down.
Correct.
Was there any molten metal ever found? Nope. Not one puddle.
That's right.
I mean, what am I missing here, Andrew?
You're not missing anything, Ralph. You know, you're just basically going to the end point that people haven't gone to. You know, where is the solidified metal? Where are the videos of this molten metal running like in a foundry that we've heard these people say? You know, we don't see it.
Not like Dr. Judy Wood has put out, because some things that look like heat aren't heat.
That's right, we go to this technology, which appears to be generating the effects of heat on the one hand, but at the same time, you know, only a few inches away, you can get an effect with no heating. So I think what we're looking at is some type of technique which at a molecular level creates the effect of heating, but the actual, you know, heat itself is not actually generated. This is why it's a new type of process that we're looking at, and we think it's a field effect that's involved.
Because we don't see any people coming out of those buildings with all the burns, like burns of all the fires and all that stuff, do we?
Certainly not in the proportion you would expect from that scale of destruction. I mean, you know, I haven't actually gone and looked at all the victims' records to see how many have burnt, you know, hands, feet, arms, heads, necks, or whatever. But if you look at the level of destruction, we should have seen a lot more burned people than that.
Let's get around, look at a couple other deal breakers. As far as I'm concerned, the first one that grabbed me when I saw it, the toasted cars is one. You can stand a quarter of a mile away from an intense fire, and I guarantee you that car or you are not going to be burned. A quarter of a mile away, give me a break.
Well, of course, that's right, but what, of course, they then said is when Dr. Judith started to talk about those pictures and post them on her website, I think it was about, we looked at this and I started to correspond with Dr. Judith at that time, and I think it was about 2 weeks after she posted those pictures or something, maybe even sooner, they said that the cars had been towed there. They were next to the World Trade Center, and then they were towed a half a mile.
We got a response to that. I know you're very familiar with it. I hear the music back in a minute. You know, the tow trucks were really busy that day. That's all they had to do was tow cars. Get me a... Oh, God, I better take another shot of coffee. Back in a minute. Okay, we're back here, and I got Andrew from the UK talking about 911 and toasted cars. And on FDR Drive, aren't there pictures of prior to the cars were there? During, there are like fires breaking out even on car tops, and then after, they're quote toasted in various means. Isn't that? Aren't there pictures
yes,
to that effect?
That's my understanding. I mean, you know, Dr. Judy is the best person to talk about that because she studied the pictures in much more detail than I have. So, you know, I think she's kind of like built up a mental map of where these cars are actually parked on the street, you know, and she'll know the type of car in a particular position. So she'll be able to sort of, you know, pull out the pictures to
show
you.
So somewhere amongst all of this, all these tow trucks are busily stacking them in and stacking them out.
Absolutely. And then, of course, what they do is they sort of go along the street and, you know, we'll think, oh, that's a nice car. We'll turn that one upside down, but the one next to it, we'll leave that alone, you know, just for fun. I mean, you know, we've got all this sort of conflagration here. We'll just ignore all that. It doesn't really matter that the buildings are just gone. We'll just tip these cars over here, just that one, and that one, and we'll leave all the rest. You know,
I've got some more deal breakers here I want to get to, but I got a caller. You want to take a caller, Randy, in Arkansas?
Sure.
Go ahead, Randy. Hello, Randy.
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah, Randy, you're on the air. Can you go? You got a question to Andrew?
Yeah, let me shut my speaker off, though.
Why don't you just grab the handset or something? Go ahead.
Okay.
There?
Yeah, is that better?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Good. Andrew, you want to ask him a question?
Well, I wanted to make a comment if I could. You know, when they had the remembrance of the 911 the other day, Huckabee, the governor of Arkansas, had a or used to be the governor, he had a special on Fox, and he had a guest on John Voight, who was he's an actor, and. They were mostly talking about the John Voight was always talking about how we need Jerusalem and all that stuff, but they were commemorating that they found a iron cross. One of the workers found an iron cross. They had some footage of it, and everybody signed it, and they put it in a little church near the 911 Ground Zero. But the thing that struck me is the way that John Voight was talking. He said. He talked about a ray of light. Now, he was trying to make it sound like that the cross that they found that was made out of one of the steel girders that came out of the building, you know, was a ray of light, you know, for hope and all that kind of stuff. Okay. But I think maybe he, being an actor, might have had something, you know, underneath his, you know, statement, you know, read between the lines type thing. The ray of light. So I just thought that might be people might be interested in hearing that.
Okay, I'm not familiar. Do you have any comment, Andrew, or not? Because I don't have a clue.
I haven't seen that particular story or anything.
Okay.
I mean, we had a similar story probably 2 or 3 years ago now with the USS New York, which apparently used 11 tons of steel from the World Trade Center, which I think is about one girder or something, or a couple of girders, and they put it into the ship, and you know, and they'd said, "God bless our troops." So, to me, it sounds like another psychological operation in that, you know, you have this sort of shock and trauma, which is then built into this idea of a ray of hope, and it's very, very powerful. It's very effective on people in getting them to shut down their thinking. Because, you know, you've got to pay respect to the victims and we don't want this sort of thing to happen again and let's all be patriotic and everything. I mean, it may be that John Voight was using certain language and trying to disclose something, but being involved with that sort of a process, I would sort of somewhat doubt that. I could be wrong, but I would somewhat doubt it.
So that is a means to distract us from what's really ticking. Look at the evidence again. What really happened?
Thanks, gentlemen.
Okay, I hear the music. We gotta take a break. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute. Okay, well, this is Ralph Herbert Witteroad II, back with the Ralph Witteroad Show, and I'm honored today to have Andrew out of the UK, and it's pushing midnight hour out there, the witching hour in England. I guess, is it England or United Kingdom? Hello?
We sort of switch between, really. We generally say UK. You know, I generally say UK, but sometimes I say England because I am actually in England, but it's all a bit weird. We seem to have a bit of an identity crisis in this country, frankly, as regards what we call ourselves.
I got it off the thing. Is Scotland still tied into England, or is it totally free?
Well, it's basically it has its own parliament now, and Wales also has what's called the Welsh Assembly, but there's a bit of crossover in the legal system, and Scotland has its own currency, whereas Wales doesn't. So it's all a bit weird the way things are organised here. You know, I don't know all the ins and outs. The Scots have a slightly different legal system. They have a slightly different educational system. But certain laws actually, you know, apply across the whole country. So I suppose really the analogy is closer to having Scotland is like a separate state of the United Kingdom, I suppose you would perhaps think of it in those terms.
Have the Brits ever forgiven us for being free now?
Well, I don't really think anybody thinks about that much these days, you know.
I have a trick question for you. Do you know why we don't have crop circles in Alaska?
Why is that?
Can't grow crops.
But there are snow circles, though. I don't know if you've ever heard of snow circles. It's true. Yeah, there have been some snow circles.
We have trouble just growing a little bit of barley, and maybe only with the government's help.
Oh, God,
so it's really hard to have crop circles up here. But we have plenty of everything else. Getting back to some other deal breakers, 800,000 tons of material didn't make it to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
There were pictures down at the bottom of shootings of looking across the debris, the level on those towers, and it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes in my mind, and I listened to Gage and his I want to call it nonsense. Now, that's what it is. Hype, misdirection, obfuscation. We had steel and concrete being pulverized in midair. Now, that's a really darn good trick.
Mm-hmm.
Explosive doesn't even pulverize steel.
No.
So that's what he put out on his press conference. It's pulverized in midair. You got any statements about the 800,000? I mean, what's your take on how?
This was again one of the big wake up calls for me, second wake up calls, because I'd kind of repeated the destruction with explosives and the steel being shipped to China and all this nonsense, which turns out not to be true. And when, I saw what Dr. Judy had put on the table, and the picture you just mentioned, the one taken at the ground level at about, I think it was about 2 o'clock, we came up with this name called the intermission picture, because it was in between when the towers were destroyed and when Building 7 was destroyed, because you can see Building 7 in the picture. So we know when it was taken. We've actually got a video clip from a documentary in the History Channel that was taken around the same time. Where did they go? That's the basic question, and it was a question I'd never asked. So they're distracting you with all this nonsense, as you say, which prevents your intellectual processes from asking the simple question, which is, where did the buildings go?
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in a minute. We've got some more questions and things we want to talk about here. It's absolutely astounding. Deal breakers. Back in a minute. We're back. We got Andrew in UK. We have a caller, Bill, in Idaho. You have a question or a comment directed to Andrew from the UK?
Well, thanks so very much. I followed this for a considerable, from the beginning, and the other technologies and applications via Department of Energy, national labs. And I was wondering, if you would run over some of that encryption discussion a little bit heavier, it might make more of an impact, considering you're talking about, transmogrification or transmutation, transformation of material, elemental material comprised of carbon, as well as forms of carbon, and a large metallic structure that would be as a lightning rod for that energy field. I only mentioned before, and I'm hoping, Ralph, that you're able to pull it off electronically, but National Labs of 99, as well as 90, I believe, have discussion on diamond deposition.
Let me interrupt you here. The transmutation of materials and stuff, I think, would probably be better directed to John Hutchinson, where he has demonstrated this. Andrew, do you have any comments about what he's questioned her?
Yeah, certainly John's got photographs of stainless steel bars, which he's subjected to the field interference effects in his experiments. And he appears to have made these bars rust, which does mean that there must have been some type of transmutation or transmogrification It appears to be some instance of salts of copper in the same bar. We also wondered, for example, the doctor would have had various conversations about this, but we haven't really posted anything in detail because we don't really, you know, have the detailed scientific evidence to back it up. And that's, for example, if the process, when it's acting on metals, perhaps there may be some type of situation where ozone gets created from the oxygen, and the ozone is a much more powerful oxidizer, and it's maybe the creation of ozone, you know, which caused the steel to rust more quickly. So there may be several effects which are going on at either a molecular or nuclear level, but unfortunately, you know, as we have, you know, mainly working from photographic evidence and a bit of information we've been given by John Hutchison, then we can only sort of progress down that path a short way. You know, I've certainly not been contacted by anybody in the scientific establishment to offer information or ask me any further questions. You know, I can tell you that now. Nobody really seems to take an interest in this and what it actually means. You know, this is one of the problems that we're dealing with, which is the intransigence of the establishment. I think that's for a mixture of reasons as well. I mean, I'm going off your original topic, but the scale of this is basically huge. You know, it's enormous, and this is what we're dealing with.
Okay, you have a follow-up question, Bill, or not, Doctor?
Yes, thank you, Ralph. Considering, I feel like your collectively your work is, you know, uber grand jury level reinvestigation and reanalysis of a purposely frauded supposed congressional investigation.
Oh, I don't doubt you at all. Absolutely, there could quote you could make grounds for a new investigation. But the program, the issue that this program is directed to, is all of the empirical evidence, provable evidence.
Exactly.
Show. We got 800,000 tons of materials, steel and concrete, just poof. There's no toilets. There's no lavatories. None of these things exist. I mean, we could call for a new investigation, but we need to understand we got a whole bunch of people out there, Gage and Jones and Fetzer and I don't know, God, not putting out nonsense.
Well, see, the thing is I believe this gentleman, and I hope we get direct contact information. Mikey has my number, but I have other people that
I was
hoping that
you
would talk to.
Why don't you give the contact number here and give the so people can get a hold of you, Andrew?
Yeah, you can contact me on the website, which is checktheevidence.com. If you want to call me, I'm in the UK, so unless you're on a good call deal, you know, it might be quite expensive to call me. Have you got any access to email at all?
Yes, of course.
Oh, well, if you email me from the website, send me your phone number in email, then I can call you back, you know, so I can get a good deal on Skype. So, you know, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate you calling in. Okay, so we got 800,000 tons of material, steel, concrete, pulverized, vanishing. We have a building top that they show that was supposedly falling off to one side that never made it to the ground. You're probably familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a bathtub that's at the bottom of this because the Twin Towers were built under the what they're built on, this bathtub area that goes down below ground level, is below sea level, right?
Correct.
And there was only a minor damage, so we got supposedly 1 million tons coming down with no seismic footprint again, no noticeable seismic footprint, and no real damage. And what do we do there? I mean, this that takes away all of the demolition, folks. It's gone. Because if what material debris, when it's coming down, does not pulverize in midair. It just doesn't happen. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Dr. Judy observed this. I mean, she's the best one to ask about this because she's got all the details, you know, that she can go through. But basically, yes, I mean, the buildings, as she says, doesn't, you know, didn't hit the ground. So if they didn't hit the ground, what happened to them? And you can keep repeating those questions, you from certainly from architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, you won't get any answers. I was contacted actually by somebody who was basically sort of describing how that group was working, and they basically anyone who was challenging the controlled demolition theory. I mean, we could see this from press conference that you played a section from last week. Anybody who is challenging the controlled demolition theory is basically treated the same as anyone who was challenging the official story of Osama bin Laden et al. They were just shut out. They weren't even given the time of day. It's just the same sort of activity. In other words, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth are the new 9/11 Commission, and they've tried to invest new credibility in them. And for all the points that you've raised and more, it's very easy to kind of show that credibility is just not there, and we can show that they're basically trying to commit another fraud.
Yeah, well, Jones, I think he's the one that brought out the space beams and laser beams and all that, trying to attack Dr. Judy Wood's evidence.
He was one of the main instigators, and I mean, a couple of years ago, you know, if people go onto my YouTube channel, which is ADJ UK, you can see some of the videos I made highlighting his statements. You know, I've actually got the video of him saying these things, saying the space beams, and basically laughing when he tells the audience about Dr. Judy losing her job. He actually laughs at this, which is pretty amazing and quite shocking, really. Then he talks about you can dip your fingers into molten metal. That's another video I've got of him. You know, he's talking about dipping your fingers into molten metal because it's quite easy to do. I mean, what's that got to do with what happened on 9/11? You know, he actually got this video of him saying that. And then we've got another video of Jones saying, this is when he was with Bill Deagle, and they're having this little chin wag, saying they're going to talk about the evidence, and then they don't talk about any evidence. I wrote a whole article about this, and I transcribed this whole 45-minute discussion. And within this discussion, they were talking about a nuclear attack on a U.S. city, because Bill Deagle has claimed repeatedly that 22 cities in the States are wired with nukes. And so Jones was basically not disagreeing with him in this interview. And Jones ends up saying, well, you know, when one of these nukes gets set off as a false flag attack on an American city and blamed on whoever, they actually say Iran at that time, I think, we know that 9/11 truthers will be out there, and we know they'll be watching. So what we want them to do is go and collect a dust sample. And when you've collected the dust sample, you can send it to me or you can send it to Bill and we'll test it. So you've got Steve Nee Jones is proposing... they even propose that somebody goes out with a Geiger counter and they go into an irradiated area, collect a dust sample, and send it to them. That's actually what they propose in this video that they're discussing. I mean, this is just craziness upon craziness.
It's falling into the hole of Alice in Wonderland and having tea with the Queen.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yet people are still... you know, repeating this. They're still repeating the iron microspheres. They're still repeating these orange chips in the dust. All of this, you know, and people have really, really fallen for it. It's just unbelievable.
I have a caller here, Larry in Louisiana. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a film I just seen on the internet of the original supposedly footage of the planes hitting the buildings, and they show a spherical object like a weapon coming down on the second strike. And going through, have you seen that, Bill?
Is it by Richard Hall? Has it got an Englishman in it with a brown jacket on?
It's a spherical object that comes down and goes through, and then they map it out how it went through, and then they
hold
show
on
that's
just a minute here.
Box.
We got to pay some bills. We'll be back in a minute. Let Andrew continue with the answer. Back in just a minute. Here, Andrew in UK, and continue on. You have Andrew, and we had a caller here.
Right, yes.
What
what they're saying is that the planes themselves was a superimposed image over some high-tech weapons that went through there. Have you seen that?
I've seen the video. In fact, I think I'm actually in it at the end.
Okay. Well, now, if you take that film and you compare that to the NASA moonwalk simulations, you'll realize that since the 60s, the technology has been there, that even if they call it live, anything you see on that TV, you can't believe it.
Well, this is one line of research, yes, and I think a mixture of things went on. I do feel that some of the TV imagery was actually, falsified in the live shot, particularly the famous shot from Chopper 7, where the plane appears to actually go through the building. But that particular shot that you referenced just before the break, which was this ball, this is a clear evidence, because the NBC footage in the morning with the second plane supposedly coming in showed, as you described, this ball, and you can actually see this ball-shaped object coming in against the backdrop of the New Jersey, I suppose it will be, with the water there and the features on the other side of the water. But then the film also includes the NBC evening shot, and you really, do need to look at this carefully to check that what I'm saying is true. And you can see from the evening shot that the ball is no longer there. They've got something which looks much more like a plane. And the shot of the towers is actually from an identical angle, because you can overlay them, but the backdrop is blue sky, and the backdrop has been completely deleted. And so Richard Hall's film, who's done this analysis, what he did was he took a 3D model of the World Trade Center, and then he modeled where this ball object was flying. He worked it out. You can see how he describes it in the video. And then he overlaid his computer-generated path with another video, which was shot by Michael Herzicani. And now Michael Herzicani shot this video. People would recognize the video if they saw it. It's a famous one where the second plane goes in and you see the fireball come out the side of the tower. People hear people screaming, and you see it from supposedly from ground level. Michael Herzicani won't talk about this film. He passed it to CNN. He says he can't talk any give any details about his film. He has to go through his lawyers, so he won't say where he was. He won't say what sort of camera he filmed it on, anything like that. He won't disclose anything about that film. So this is very peculiar. And again, if you watch a film called September Clues, you will see a great number of anomalies in the video record from 9/11 at the World Trade Center. All kinds of things in the video record, a lot of which you can download from the Internet Archive, things that don't add up. So TV fakery, absolutely, and same with the moon landings, certainly, yes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it, is go all the way to realize the technology we're looking at right now is at least 100 years old ahead. And you can't believe anything you see, even if they call it live, because they faked the moon landing in the 60s. And then those balls and them pictures, you can't miss it. You should put the website out where people can go see that video.
Yeah, well, that's actually also hosted on my website. And if you go to Richard Hall's website, which is richplanet.net, and you'll find a 9/11 link on richplanet.net, and you'll see that there, and you can go and watch the analysis video that you've described.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling, and Guy in Arkansas, you're up. Guy in Arkansas.
Austin.
Oh, we lost him? Oh, okay, well, we'll continue on here then. Andrew, I find it shocking. You've been attacked, I'm sure, by taking some of these stances of putting this evidence out, haven't you?
Yes.
And so has Dr. Judy Wood.
She's been much more of a target.
Now the question becomes, do they ever attack the evidence?
Well, they try. They'll basically just turn around and say things like, we've already discussed, they'll try and say the cars were towed there, but, we can disprove that. They will try and say that the steel's not turning to dust, it's falling down. And it's not actually, this is what Steve Jones tried to say. He tried to say that the steel was shaking and falling, it wasn't turning to dust, when you can clearly see that it is. So they will generally try to attack the evidence, but it's pretty difficult to attack it, so they'll just... The more common thing is to misquote it. This is what we found, and this is what I've documented in the book that I've written, which is called 9/11 Finding the Truth, and you can download that for free from my website. You can even download it in audiobook form. So, you know, if you're driving around the place and you've got an iPod or an iPhone or whatever, you can listen to the whole thing on there and download it all for free. So, you know, you can see what they're up to. If you watch for long enough, you know, Dr. Wood and I have worked in similar ways. I've tried to document the evidence of how the cover-up is operating while she's documented the physical evidence. So we've tried to sort of do a bit of, you know, sort of delegating of tasks, as it were. I've delegated myself this task, and Dr. Wood has delegated herself that task of looking at the physical evidence. And you can begin to see the strategies and how they work, in that you mix things up, you misquote things, and you put words into people's mouths that they never said, and it's very effective.
Okay, hold that thought back in a minute. Okay, we're back here, and we have a call from Illinois, the Chicago gangster state. Abraham, you there?
I'm here. How's it going?
Why, are you good? You got any questions or comments about our subject today?
Yeah, I heard you guys discussing 89/11 truth and how some of the, you know, quote, truth organizations who claim to be concerned with getting to the bottom of what happened on 9/11 actually censored discussion about some of the most important evidence that's out there, you know, which I consider to be the thousands of photos and graphs and videos and documents that Dr. Judy Wood has gathered and displayed on her website for everyone to analyze. And it just blows my mind that the censorship is that severe and the effort to divert people away from her website is so significant and so obvious. And I will be completely honest. I used to be an enormous supporter of 89/11 truth. I thought that they were the answer, and that's mainly because I'm a medical student, and so one of the most common ways for me to bring up my concerns with 9/11 was to bring up the old peer-reviewed paper by Dr. Stephen Jones, and that way, you know, I could discuss that with my professors because it was scientific and whatnot. And I had bought DVDs from 89/11 truth. I had, you know, I signed their petition. I was a supporter. I think I spent about $100 or maybe a little more in total between their DVDs and promotional material I bought and the donations I gave them. So one day I was on Facebook and just posting, you know, this letter to other scientists trying to say, look, there's this peer-reviewed paper. We should look at this and analyze this. And another PhD professor, Dr. Tracy Poster, actually said, hey, Thermite doesn't explain all the evidence. Have you seen all this evidence at this website? And so, being a scientist, you know, I didn't want to just ignore evidence, and so I went and checked out Dr. Wood's website, and I'll be honest, it took an enormous amount of time to get through all the information, because there's a lot of it. I watched her new Hiroshima presentation about 3 or 4 times, and after a while, I just started to realize there are all these things that explosives, whether they be nuclear devices or thermite, they just do not explain. And so, I thought, innocently enough, that maybe Richard Gage and Dr. Stephen Jones just don't know about Dr. Judy Wood. And so, naturally, I looked up Richard Gage's email, and I sent him an email just harmlessly saying, hey, I've signed your petition. I'm a supporter. I'm a donor. You know, do you know about Dr. Judy Wood? Have you checked out her research? It was a very simple and brief email, and surprisingly, I didn't hear back from them at all. And a couple days later, I noticed a friend alerted me that they were browsing the website or something, because I was trying to point people to their website. But they noticed that I wasn't on the petition anymore, and I was blown away. So I went to check it out, and I verified this with my own eyes, and it turned out that I was actually silently removed from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth petition just for asking Richard Gage a question about Dr. Judy Wood in an email. And so I was very alarmed by this, and so I started posting everywhere I could to explain what happened, you know, that they silently removed me from that petition. And it wasn't until I started posting in forums all over the Internet that's when AE911 Truth contacted me. And I received a message from an email from Mark Graham. I think his title is the volunteer coordinator of AE911 Truth. And he read in a forum that I was telling people about what happened. And he basically offered me a refund and encouraged me to stop talking about it because he said that the discussion of Dr. Judy Wood and her website is not within, quote, the scope of AE 9/11 truth. And so I was just very alarmed by that. And I considered that censorship to a degree because, you know, I was very hurt that I had been giving money to this organization and trying to direct so many people to their website only to be just, you know, just removed like that, just without saying, hey, thanks for trying to help us out, but we don't support Dr. Judy Wood, or hey, thanks for the tip, but that's old news, or something like that. But no, they just removed me from their petition and later on contacted me once they found out I was sharing my story, and they attempted to offer me a refund. And I guess just one more thing, and if I'm running too long, feel free to cut me off or stop me. But
no, that's fine. What we have here, first of all, is we have first-hand information that the Richard Gage and the A&E guys, they're not after the truth. Do you have a comment on that before you continue on, Andrew? You have any comment about what these guys
are up to? Absolutely. I mean, it's just really great to hear from Abe, and I'd like to thank him, you know, very much for sharing all this information with us. And he's been, Abe's been working extremely hard in trying to, you know, similar in the way that I have. I mean, you know, thankfully he's a bit younger than I am, so he's got a bit more energy than I have, and he's done some amazing work on the forums to try and, you know, he's eloquently described exactly what's happened. And if people want to read this letter that Abe was sent, this email, then it's on my website. You know, Abe and I corresponded over this, and we posted this along with a little sort of introduction. So I'm very thankful that Abe is actually, you know, he understands what the scientific method is, which is basically, in summary, to actually look at the evidence, not to sweep it under the carpet, not to say it doesn't fit in with your message, but to actually look at it and actually try and come up with an explanation for it. Now, and this is exactly what Abe has done. This is exactly what I've tried to do. And of course, we're both, you know, years behind what Dr. Judy Wood has tried to do. So, you know, it comes back to the same thing of looking at the evidence, and then we've also tried to document our own evidence in terms of how we've been treated and the sort of reaction we've been getting. And it really does, I think, as Abe has fully experienced, he's been very much attacked on the forums. That's partly why I've not had the energy to do it, because the result is, I think Abe would agree, it's pretty much always the same. You know, you just get anonymous people calling your names, trashing you, not looking at the evidence, misquoting things, misdirecting things, you know.
Yeah, and thank you, Andrew, for all the work you've done. Your website, checktheevidence.com, you know, it's just so full of information, and it's presented in an unbiased way, and it just lets the reader to view the information and make up their own mind about it. And Andrew Johnson was one of the individuals whose website I browsed in my initial discovery of Dr. Judy Wood's website, because there's a lot of similar information on his website as well, and so I ended up watching a lot of the videos and content on his website. And after a while of, you know, thanking Andrew and asking him questions through the email, we developed a relationship enough that if something happened to me, like with did with the 89/11 truth situation, a couple months after it had happened, you know, Andrew helped me out by creating an article about it and sharing some of the emails I had received and sharing some of the screenshots I had captured. So he's not only done his own work, but he's helped me to kind of help spread my story as well. And so thank you, Andrew, for doing what you're doing. Thank you, Ralph, for having Andrew on the air. It's so important to discuss this stuff.
Let me interrupt here before you comment, Andrew. You know, I've watched some of these web pages, and these attacks are so evil. Mm. They've attacked Dr. Judy Wood. She's having sex with this. She's doing sex. She doesn't have a PhD. She can't talk. She can't put a sentence together. She never went to Clemson University. I mean, honest to God, I mean, what kind of evil are these people?
It really makes you wonder. Mm.
Yeah, I just sit and scratch my head. I said, what is behind all of this? I mean, and then you look at Jones, he's got a PhD. You got Fetzer, PhD. Jenkins, I think he's got a PhD. What the heck is going on with these folks?
I agree. Other thing which Abe has managed to prove as well, which he did, I can't remember whether it was before or after the incident we just described, but he tried to create a Wikipedia entry for Dr. Judy, and basically he did a very good job with that and mentioned the court case and how this was very notable. And I think the page lasted, what was it, 24 hours, was it? Was it about 24
maybe
hours?
Even less.
It was less than 24 hours and the page was deleted. So, again, we documented all of this. And this actually followed on from an earlier attempt in 2007 by somebody that was in touch with us then who mysteriously kind of disappeared. They also tried to create a Wikipedia page about Dr. Judy. And within, I think, 24, 48 hours, it was deleted. So,
can I elaborate on that really quick on the Wikipedia page? I just wanted to give some details because it kind of sounds, you know, very vague to say, oh, we tried to create a page and they took it down. But more specifically, you know, I was very naive to this whole censorship. I thought it might have been simply a matter of people just not knowing about Dr. Wood, not necessarily people actively putting forth energy to, you know, spread rumors about her and whatnot. So, you know, I asked Dr. Wood ahead of time because I figured I would need permission to use the content of her website to create an article such as her biography and her credentials and a picture of her Supreme Court legal documents that are all on her website. And so I emailed her and got permission first. And, you know, like Andrew said, once I created that article, it was taken down within 24 hours. And so I didn't know that I could appeal the decision. So my next logical step was to say, okay, well, if Wikipedia's admins are not going to let me have a page for Dr. Judy Wood, who's the only person, only 9/11 truth researcher who's actually filed her evidence in the court of law, and one of her court cases actually made it all the way to the level of the Supreme Court in October 2009 before it was dismissed by a judge because he labeled it as a conspiracy theory. You know, Dr. Jones hasn't done that. He hasn't filed his peer-reviewed paper with the court of law, but he, of course, has his own Wikipedia page, and David Ray Griffin has his own Wikipedia page, and he's a theologian. He's not even a scientist, but he's allowed to have his own page. So my next logical step was to say, well, hey, if they're not going to let me have a page for Dr. Judy Wood, then I'm going to just try and, you know, put a website and maybe a few sentences on the Wikipedia page entitled 9/11 Truth Movement, because I figured, you know, even though she's an independent researcher and whatnot, I thought that that would be a good way to bring attention to her website, and I thought that her name and her website deserved to be on that page with the other researchers, especially considering David Ray Griffin and other many less qualified researchers are on there. So all I tried to do after the whole page I created was taken down was to just add a sentence or two about her. I mentioned her court case, and I mentioned her credentials, and then just put a small little link to drjudywood.com at the bottom. And even that was instantly deleted by whatever admins were actively monitoring my actions. And so after I realized that this was going nowhere, that's when I started to look into the appeal process and how you can try and use Wikipedia's discussion and public nature to try and appeal decisions that are deleted against what you think is, you know, if they're doing it unfairly, in your opinion. So I appealed it. I looked into the process of the appeals, and it was just a group of maybe five moderators that kind of controlled the entire discussion. And the two reasons that were given for the deletions and the denials of the appeals were, number one, that I was in violation of a copyright, which is totally incorrect because I had received permission from Dr. Wood, and I was letting them know this. And the second reason they gave was that she's not a notable enough researcher, even though she's published many things unrelated to 9/11, even though she's the only person who's filed evidence in the court of law in relation to 9/11, you know, she's done countless interviews, whether it's on, I know you had her on the Republic Broadcasting Network recently, Ralph, many other shows, like the very popular St. Ambrose Lane show, which I believe is in Washington, D.C., maybe. And I provided all these links, and, you know, I provided government evidence that she had filed an RFC, which she filed a few months before 8/9/11 Truth even was formed or had their website up, and all this information, and they still just stuck to those two rules and just kept denying me. And so after looking more into the policy, it seems that Wikipedia is supposed to leave those discussions open for public view and public comment for 5 to 7 days before a final decision is made. But my discussion, because I was pursuing it so vigorously, and I'm not sure if that's why or if it's just straight-up censorship, but it was actually given a decision within less than 12 hours. And we have screenshots of all of this, documenting this. I took as many screenshots as I could and captured as much of the direct text as I could, and I instantly sent it to Andrew Jackson so he could create an article of it because I was so concerned about what was going on. This was a real rude awakening to me because I had no idea Wikipedia was this type of website.
Well, what we have here is we have a censorship and a misinformation. I know Dr. Judy Wood was removed from professors questioning 911, engineers questioning 911, the Patriots questioning 911, and more. Said, why is this? Why doesn't anybody, like Andrews found out, he's got to check the evidence. I think that's pretty telling. Why doesn't anybody want to attack the evidence? Because they can't.
I agree.
They cannot attack the evidence. So what do we got here? We have what? Free energy. We have Tesla's type of stuff that he had a major problems with his life with J.P. Morgan and GE and all that with his discoveries. They don't want it out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what I've said, and I'm not the first to say it, but I just say that what you're looking at is something which undermines the whole basis on which the modern world operates, which is basically an equation of scarcity. You know, the whole of our economic systems, etc., revolve around the idea of scarcity. And the physics behind this weaponry is actually a physics of plenty. It means you can get energy whenever you need it and however you need it, if you know how to do it. And once you've cracked that technology, then you don't need to burn fossil fuels. You don't need anything like that. And we can see that 9/11 is a demonstration of that technology at work. And we can see that in all the evidence that Dr. Judy has compiled. So if you've got the most important secret in the world, then you have to have the biggest cover-up, the most comprehensive censorship that you can possibly muster, right down to the last, you know, byte of computer information that's publicly available. And that's exactly ties up with the experience that I've had in the last 3 years, and Abe has had maybe in the last 6 months to a year. We've had an identical experience with trying to deliver this information to people. But essentially, I think now there are some sort of holes forming in the armor, however small they are. And we are beginning to just have a few small breakthroughs, but I'm just beginning to wonder if the rate at which people are finding out about this is any faster than the rate at which people are dying, if you see what I mean. Because, you know, there are so many deaths each minute, and I'm just wondering whether that matches the number of people that are finding out about what lies and cons we've all been subjected to for all these years.
Yeah.
Well, I just find it shocking that these people that have PhDs behind their name piled higher and deeper that are involved in this. I mean, they're just lighting up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say one last thing before.
Go ahead, Abe.
Okay. I just want to say one real quick thing before I go. But I just want to say that if anyone listening, if you have any concerns or any questions, or I really encourage everyone that's listening to not take our word for it, to really just look at all the evidence Dr. Wood has gathered. Look at Andrew's website that's full of evidence, checktheevidence.com. Look at AE911 Truth's website. Look at all sides of the story, as much information as you can, and make up your own mind, because that is what's really important, is that you just look at all the evidence you can and make up your own mind, because we are all intelligent human beings who are all capable of looking into this on our own. And that's one of the biggest fallacies I've seen with, quote, truth seekers, is that they oftentimes just end up following with what sounds the best, what is looking to be the most popular. And, you know, if something disagrees with you, you should be eager to go look at that and see if it's a good proof, if it's good evidence. And so I just wanted to say, look into it for yourself, please. And lastly, thank you both of you, Andrew and Ralph. Discussing this information is so important, because this technology could be used in the world.
Thank you, Abe. We're going to be back in a minute here, and we got about 3.5 minutes left after we come back. Back in a minute. Okay, well, we're back from break here, and I want to make just a couple of short statements here. These truthers out there, because I've been getting involved in some of these blogs, they're absolutely not interested in any evidence. It's always about name-calling, that type of nonsense. Another thing is I've had Dr. Judy Wood is coming out with a new book very shortly, and it will blow your socks off. It's going to be a textbook type thing about 911, because we haven't even begun to cover all of the empirical evidence that she's researched out. And with that said, Andrew, have you got some more comments that you'd like to, before in the last 3 minutes here, however you'd like to close? Because you have an absolutely sure. amazing site. I like Check the Evidence. What a novel dang idea.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, you know, it just actually it was interesting because not long after I set up the site, somebody wrote to me and said, that can they buy the domain name? You know, in other words, can they buy the name Check the Evidence? And so I said no, because it wasn't for sale, you know, so I didn't even I wasn't even interested in what they had to offer for money-wise, you know, or anything like that. But, yeah, I mean, the scale of this cover-up is huge, and I think the point I would say is that there is a lot to take on board. You know, going to my website, you know, people will find it probably quite interesting, but if you come to the conclusions that I've come to from all of it, it's a lot. A huge lot to take on board. In fact, I've had to let go of an awful lot of what I took to be the basis of how I live my life. I've just been left with a few sort of core beliefs, and most of the other stuff, you know, I don't watch television anymore. I don't really watch movies much anymore. I watch about one movie a month, probably less, you know. And so it can be quite, it's like shedding a skin, you know, several skins at once. And you can end up feeling quite isolated in some ways. So if people go through that sort of process, then it may mean that you're actually on the right path, as it were. But people have to make these decisions for themselves, as Abe has said very eloquently. Don't be guided by movements or, you know, by me saying you should do this or you should do that. You should just do what you're drawn to do. And if you're interested to know, you know, what's going on in the world, then all that Dr. Wood and I and other people have done is we've just tried to make the evidence available for you to look at and try and work out what the hell it means.
And they will not go to the evidence. The people that all these truthers, and they just keep springing up. Every day there's a new one out there.
Yep, the nuke.
Now there's a new one on nukes now. Dr. Yeah. Judy Wood's promoting nukes because they took a little bit of information off her homepage, and all of a sudden it's Dr. Judy Wood is promoting nukes. It just never ends. It's unbelievable.
That's right.
Anyway, boy, I really want to thank you, Andrew, for assisting Dr. Judy Wood and Abe and the others that are in this battle that have checked the evidence out and are willing to stand and fight.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, too.
I mean, we, the Americans and the English, and the people need to have the truth out there. And this free energy issue and this stuff is so hot, nobody wants to talk about it. And like I say, who's gone to court? Dr. Judy Wood. There's all kinds of other things like Irwin, the hurricane that was right up beside New York. Nobody wants to talk about that. It never happened. I mean, it just never ends. Shocking. These professors, that's just absolutely shocking. Fetzer and Jones and William Deagle and all these guys. I don't know. It totally destroys any faith you got in what we have going on in our universities and colleges.
It does. It does. I mean, you end up doing that because of the way, and that's to do with the way that funding is, you know, arranged particularly. And, you know, again, you go back to Eisenhower's speech in 1961, and he warned of the, not only the military-industrial complex, but he used this phrase, he actually said in that speech, that a government contract becomes a substitute for intellectual curiosity. And that's actually what he said in 1961. So he could see the writing on the wall. And what we now have, I think, is very much a result of that.
I don't know. It's absolutely shocking. You know, it's just, here we have, arguably, I don't think a guy could say there's been a greater crime of the century. I mean, it's absolutely astounding. I mean, anyway. Well, anyway, I really want to thank you. I'm very honored that you took the time to come on. And you have the webpage, and you're assisting in getting the real evidence out there. And hopefully people will go to your webpage and Dr. Judy Woods. Checkthevidence.com.